It's another edition of the Fallscast brought to you by the Falls Free Press in beautiful Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, where today, Monday, January 17th, it is indeed beautiful, and yet we are covered with snow for days.
Blanketed.
The snowpocalypse, if you will. It has been quite a day here on Martin Luther King Day. We should acknowledge that it is in Martin Luther King Day, but of course everything that's on our minds right now is the snow. I don't know about you guys, but my body hurts from shoveling. I'm not into it.
Yeah.
Snowblower and shoveling, and yeah.
Yeah, I feel away. Fine. I was drinking coffee watching Mike out there.
Oh.
It was good.
I have no aches at all.
Yeah. Feeling great. Okay.
Gabe and I went out and did it. He used the shovel, and I used my electric snowblower, which was riding the struggle bus a little bit because it was
blue.
It's a little, yes, it's blue and it's a little underpowered for as much snow we had. But you just push it, it goes, and you just pull it back and push it. But it did. I did the whole driveway and our walkway and then the sidewalk and took a couple hours, but I did it. I did take a gummy after that because my back was saying no.
Steve was enjoying the snow plowing.
Because he knew what he was going to get.
No, he treated his symptoms after.
Yeah, I treated my symptoms after my back pain. Yeah. I took a gummy afterwards, and it helped the pain go away.
Yeah,
you heard it here, folks. go ahead.
Mike's snowblower is like really old, and he has to. How did you even try to fix it? I don't know.
I rigged it with a piece of 2x2 because the cable that actuates the impeller and the auger froze. So I had to prop it with a 2x2 in order to get it to actuate. So, yeah, it's on its last leg. It's an old snowblower. So
how long have you had it for?
But
I bought it. Oh, shit, it's old. No, I got it. That and a string trimmer for $120 from some dude who rebuilds them out of the trash and whatnot. That was 10, 11 years ago. And I couldn't tell you how old it is. It's an old 2-stroke, like, weed trimmer powered snowblower. It's an Ahrens, but
it's a Frankenstein, but it does job.
It's probably like late 70s, early 80s when that thing was built. But yeah, it does the job, but
it works.
Yeah. Time for a new one.
It works to a point. Yeah. I want to get a new one, but
mine requires this
kind of snow.
Mine requires this kind 100-foot extension cord.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I had one of those. Yeah. There's a guy in the Falls that I see every summer. He does rebuilds of lawnmowers, push lawnmowers, mm-hmm. riding lawnmowers, snowblowers, weed whackers, whatever. So I could have been the same guy. So
this guy, he was on Mogador, but who knows? He may have moved. You know, it was just I heard about him from a friend of a friend kind of thing, you know, and I was like, went over there. And I was like, hey, why not? You know, and it works fine up until you get this heavy, wet snow like, you know, this. And if it's over, 12 inches, it's like, fuck. But
yeah. Well, we hope everybody was able to get their cars free. There's no school in Cuyahoga Falls School District on Tuesday the 18th, which I don't know if this will go up tomorrow or not, but by the time you're hearing this, your kids will be home from school, as will mine. Hopefully the city's trucks will get the rest of the city taken care of here tonight. We know it's been a pretty rough night. And with it being Martin Luther King Day, I was saying this before we started recording, it's a good chance that the city really had to concentrate on its section of Route 8 just to make sure that people were going to be safe getting out of town and all the main roads and stuff. I live really close to Oakwood Drive, and everybody said Oakwood was fine, but my street was not touched. I still don't think a city truck has come down my street here at 7 p.m., but we have somebody on our block who drives a plow truck who dug us out, so that was pretty handy.
Yeah, my landlord was texting me this morning and said, hey, I'll get a plow out to you, but I'm kind of on the bottom of their list right now, so it's going to be a while. As of just before we started recording, I still have not seen a plow, so I might also be home tomorrow, you know, whether I'm supposed to work or not.
I think that might be the case for a lot of people, but we hope that overnight they'll get to it. I don't think it's snowing much, if at all, now. But yeah, I saw something that said, like on my phone, it said that we got 25 inches in 24 hours.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my
God. I know I had 13 in the driveway, so.
Yeah, it was.
Is that in Cuyahoga Falls or just like across Ohio?
Overall.
That's what my phone said in Cuyahoga Falls. Now, I don't know how accurate that is. I don't know how they measure that. Who knows?
I would say 18 inches here I would got in front of my house.
Yeah. Yeah, I like you, Stephen, because I heard you saying this before. Like, I took one step outside this morning. I was supposed to go to an appointment really early this morning, like 7 o'clock. And, Jen, you said you went to work. I have no idea how you did it, but I took one step off my steps.
I got up at 4:45, but no one was getting up to plow or shovel or snowblow my driveway, so I just was like, I almost got stuck 2 or 3 times, but I made it, and then I just like ran every stop sign that was in my neighborhood because it was bad. But the only reason I was able to get out of the street is because someone else had driven, so I was in their track.
You followed their track.
Yeah. But when I came home, still, like, Francis has been plowed, but our back streets, Arcadia, Albemarle, they have not been touched yet. So it is what it is.
Yeah. I guess the car has snow mode. You just put it in snow mode and just went 25, 35 miles an hour the whole way to Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, literally there were only a few cars on the highway, but there was a lot of, like, people that were, like, in the ditch.
Oh,
You know, their hazards on, and you just feel so bad. But it's like, I'm not stopping for you, buddy.
You know,
should have gone
kind of one
slower.
Of those you're using the concrete median as a guide because you can't see.
That was 480 and 271.
It was all snow-covered, didn't see any lanes. It was bad, but we just 30 miles an hour the whole way, and it took me like an hour and a half to get to Cleveland. It was not bad.
How was 90 in Chester?
They were bad, too. Everything was bad. Like, a plow had been by, but it had been like a few hours, and we had like 6 inches of snow on the ground.
Stay safe out there, everybody. I'm not from here originally, so, you know, I've been here long enough now that I'm used to it and I know how to drive. And most of us, I think, are pretty used to it and can deal with all this stuff. But you know the folks who haven't been around for that long when you see them, because this is this turns our world upside down. You figure it out pretty quick, though, don't you?
On a funny side note, when I was over doing helping Kathy and their apron and stuff, there was the guys that live down the street that are from Africa. You know, he was walking down the middle of the street, and I was just chatting with him, and his van was stuck down a Drug Mart. He's just like, what the, you know, look at me like, what the hell is this? Like, welcome to Ohio.
Yeah.
Well, we've made it one sentence into our preamble so far because we're talking about weather conditions. Well, I will just go ahead and say we are here with some of our favorite Fallscasters, most of whom, all of whom have talked now that we've been talking about snow for the last 20 minutes or whatever it's been. First and foremost, of course, my best friend, Mr. Michael Searle, is with us.
Hello, everybody, and I hate you, Alex.
Yes, thank you. His lovely and talented wife, Suzanne Searle, is here.
Hello.
You know, Mike, I'm thinking at one of these episodes, I'm just going to go in and edit with the word. At one point, you're going to say the word love, and I am going to.
I have said that I loved him one time. Right. I was like, I love you, Alex, but I fucking hate you.
We also have with us the dynamic Bart Sullivan.
Hello.
And, of course, our friends the Mulays, Stephen and Jennifer.
Hello.
Howdy doodly do.
And we are joined, last but not least, by Miss Kathy McMenemy.
Hello.
And I'm Alex Hall. On today's Fallscast, we will have the folks from CF Digging History on the show to tell us all about their metal detecting exploits and what amazing things they have found. Bart, any preview of that interview?
They recorded their sort of end of the year finds video just after we recorded the interview. So they had a lot of stuff they'd found over the previous year, you know, laid out on a table in front of them. So I got to see some really cool stuff. So they had an old Civil War cannonball they found, basically a pin that was classified as a driver's license. So, like, a driver's license for, like, a milkman or somebody like that.
Huh.
But it's just a pin. So, basically, a CDL.
Now, they just do this all around Cuyahoga Falls, or where?
The one guy's from Cuyahoga Falls. The other one, I believe he said he's from Doylestown. I can't remember. But they go through and, you know, they check to make sure they're allowed to dig where they're planning on going. So, if they're just looking for pocket change, they can go to parks if they're allowed. Otherwise, you know, see a cool house. It looks like they might find something. Check with the owners.
That's pretty
cool. But they've done a lot of stuff, you know. It sounds like they've gone through Cuyahoga Falls, Stowe, Talmadge, all sorts of places.
Hmm. Yeah, and the Cuyahoga Falls Historical Society Museum has a whole case of stuff that just stuff that they have found on display, right?
Yeah, and it's right there at the entrance.
Okay, cool. Well, we look forward to hearing that interview, and we thank those guys for joining us. Also, we want to continue to encourage our readers and listeners to shop local. So please keep your money in the falls. This week, I went to Mr. Bulky's on Howe Avenue.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever talked about Mr. Bulky's, and I was like, how is that? How has it never come up? But my children turned 7 years old, two daughters, and Lainey was begging me for a pinata, and they had them at the dollar store, and I was like, okay, I guess we're doing this. But they didn't have a lot of stuff to put in them, and I didn't want to get, like, a whole big bag of candy. I would rather have, like, gotten things I knew they would really like. And then it hit me at work one day, like, I could go to Mr. Bulky's and get exactly what I want and exactly the quantity I want, you know? And I hadn't been in there in forever. What a great little place to have in the falls. If you haven't been there, it's on Howe Avenue, just real close to El Papa, in that same little strip, that side of the street. And they have not even just candy, but they have, like, flour, brown sugar, rice, beans, like, anything you can imagine, like, in bulk. You buy it by the pound. You put the little twister on there, write the number, bring it up to the cash register, and they weigh it, and you ring you up. And, I mean, I got plenty of stuff for, like, you know, $5 or less. So, highly recommended. You guys have been to Mr. Bulky's?
We have.
It's been a long time since I've been to Mr. Bulky's, but many fond memories, especially getting, like, chocolate-covered raisins and smuggling it into the movie theater over there.
Before
it closed down.
Regal Independence is still there, right around the corner. That's a great plan. Bart, you and me, man. Yeah. I'm going to go see Spider-Man and go to Mr. Bulky's.
So did Lainey get her whack on the pinata yet, or it's still to come?
Oh, yeah, it happened. Yeah, I've got a couple of videos. Jaja, actually, my mom went to the factory where they make Louisville Sluggers. So I had one of those tiny little Louisville Sluggers. It was like the perfect size for a 7-year-old's hand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of us, like, I tied it to a broom and stood back, and, like, you know, we blindfolded them and turned them around 3 times and made them go up and take a crack at it. And they hit it every time. That exact scenario played out when I was a child, except I got hit right in the face by somebody because I looked at that kid who couldn't
stand
back while they said, yeah, I know. I couldn't, like, not stand back. I had to know. I had to be right there when the candy started raining down. And
learn your lesson.
You got to make that into a short story.
So, yeah, Mr. Bulky's. And then the other spot I went to was the Hibachi Grill there on Monroe Falls Avenue. Relatively new place, very, very, very small. Like 2 employees in there. But if you like that hibachi style food, you know, it's like rice and veggies on a grill with whatever meat you choose. Mm-hmm. That yum yum sauce stuff that's like mayonnaise with paprika or whatever it is. Yeah, relatively inexpensive, quick. And, you know, it's quick and dirty Asian food, but not quite like, you know, Chen. That's like a different school of Asian food.
A different school of dirty?
Yeah. Or, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Look, it's not the best thing in the world, but it scratches the itch. You know, if you don't want to go to Hibachi Japan and spend however much it costs, I've never actually been there. This is
so
the
much
takeout.
Food, though. It's like $3.
They do. It was so good, though.
Except normally I'm worried about dying, so I don't go there.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, that's true. Sesame, so she's like, I'm going to die. So we never
did. Right. So what about you guys? Where'd you go? Bart?
You know, I actually didn't really go anywhere because I was trying to stay, you know, away from people. However, I did go to Summit Mall last Wednesday because I needed some shopping therapy. And so I went to the Pops and Beard store.
The what?
Exactly the place, yeah.
Yeah.
What is it called?
What?
Pops and Beards.
Pop and Beards.
Yeah, it is a Funko Pop store where they also sell beards. But so I, you know, went and bought some toys.
Yeah.
I got a really nice Audrey 2 figure from Little House.
Love that. Mules?
We also were hiding like Bart and didn't go anywhere. We got carry out. Molly Brown's for breakfast this weekend. And
nice.
I think some Sing Biryani for dinner in the week. But, yeah, we're not going anywhere.
Those are both solid choices, though.
Yum, yum, yum.
How is Molly Brown's for takeout?
It's good.
It's really good. God, that hobo skillet. Jesus, you could feed 3 people with that thing. It's got everything in it.
We usually get 2 meals and we share it between 3 people and we have leftovers.
And then we have a next meal. Wow. So it's like 6 meals. Yeah,
it's
for $25. Yeah, it's Molly Brown's is good for carryout.
Good, Kathy.
I actually don't think I've done anything this week that I can remember.
All right.
I'm sorry.
No, I was just thinking that I don't think we went anywhere either, did
I'm so happy to hear everyone is being good and isolating good. And staying away from all the Omicron. Good here job, family.
That's even yeah. even when I went to the mall, you know, I picked such a good time because, well, no one goes there to begin with. That, and then, you know, 5 o'clock on a Wednesday.
Is that Summit yeah. Mall?
Yeah. 5 o'clock just, on a Wednesday, I mean, it was dead. And it's like, I can just walk right through. There's still people guilt. There, but good I was job. Away from, yeah, I was away from people enough.
Yeah.
And I'll say, like, Mr. Bulky's, like, they had, like, a little rope outside the door. Yeah. You had to, like, walk in, and, like, they had gloves if you wanted them. Face mask, sanitizer, you had to, like, grab those, grab a clean pencil, and then you could start, like, going through and getting your stuff. They had all the scoops, all the, like, little cubbies that have the scoops in them were marked clean. So clearly they're taking things very seriously there. And, yeah, the only other thing I did was take out. So cool. Well, as always, we would love to see your submissions of work if you want to collaborate with us or if you just want to see us interview with somebody specific. You could also drop us a line at falsefreepress@gmail.com or via our Facebook page at facebook.com/falsefreepress. If you don't, we'll have to start interviewing pets. And frankly, that would be more exciting than interviewing me 3 goddamn times. Am I right?
Yes.
I think people want to see the pets over Alex.
Oh, yeah.
I think even without Alex,
they still want to see the pets. Yeah. Regardless.
What if I was the one interviewing the pets, though? See,
oh,
there.
My.
Oh.
You would just well, give preferential treatment to your cats.
Oh.
I mean, they're pretty badass cats, though. I mean, just, you know.
Well, just the one. I've only seen the one.
My father-in-law.
You think you've only seen one, but they look exactly alike.
They all look the same. My father-in-law was saying, I've noticed people with cats, they just don't seem to have one. They have more than one cat.
More than one.
I started thinking about it. I was like, I know a lot of people that have like 3-4 cats.
They collect them.
Yeah. I just have one. Awesome. Is she,
yeah, but
is
you have a dog.
Very,
they,
that's true.
I don't think she's open to having a friend.
No.
Yeah, some cats don't like friends.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
I think it depends on when you get them. Too.
Yeah.
I don't think Abby would put up with that.
No.
She don't put up with them going by in the yard, you know.
Yeah, well, mine were litter mates, so they'd probably freak out if they didn't have each other.
Yeah.
But.
If they were raised together, like if I would ever get cats again, I think try to get 2 that were together.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always work out that way, you know. Sometimes you just see one that needs you, and you just have to take that one.
Yep. Yep. Oh, also, I mean, there are crazy things happen. Like, you know, we had adopted a cat where I used to live because there was this, like, hoarder house with, like, 80 orange cats in it. Like, the Humane Society was like, please come and adopt a cat because we've got 80 freaking cats that we didn't have yesterday. So, yeah, I was like, well, we can probably take one on. So we did. And I moved, and I've got the 2 cats that I have now. But, you know, the one was left behind, so they went and got another cat. So, you know, that one had a mate, but yeah. Okay. So also please keep sending us your feedback to tell us what you think of the show, and how much you hate Mike by sending your comments to falsefreepress@gmail.com. Did I say that out loud? I think I did.
No, Mike's so tired. He's like, I can't even fight it.
It's all good.
Or facebook.com/falsefreepress. And also review us on your podcast catcher, whatever you're using to listen to our show, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. Nothing gets Bart excited like feedback. Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing, really?
And I hear that Spotify has a whole brand new comment section now.
Oh, no.
So,
oh, my. I mean,
get those really awesome comments out there for Spotify.
Oh, yeah.
Finally, please get vaccinated and wear a mask. People age 5 and up can get vaccinated, and it's one of the major reasons we can, well, go enjoy live music. Cross that one off. Hang out in person. Cross that one off. The fact is the new variants and the low rate of vaccinated people are making this thing worse and worse and worse. So just get over your bullshit and get vaccinated, period. We're all sick of it.
We're sick of it.
Period.
All right. Period.
All right, so into our roundtable discussion then. Item 1. The Merriman Valley Master Plan was released to the public on Thursday, showing the vision for the Merriman Valley as a livable neighborhood and outdoor recreation destination. That's a quote from the newspaper. At the edge of the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. The consulting agency FAR Associates completed the plan, which is 170 pages. After lots of planning meetings, debate, and surveys, they were paid $200,000 for their efforts. The idea is to conserve undeveloped land, create plans to develop sustainably, and activate ecotourism through better access to green space, trails, the Cuyahoga River, and the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. That also is a quote from the newspaper. Rezoning will allow for walkable and sustainable neighborhoods, and they will address traffic with roundabouts and create community spaces such as space for live events, like a concert space. They also want to have a stop on the scenic railroad down there and build the world's largest canoe, which is kind of a cool idea. The draft of the plan allows for additional public input before zoning changes and et cetera move forward. So one of the things they wanted to emphasize is that it is a draft. Have you guys had a chance to look at the draft yet?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
No, we haven't seen it yet.
I'm interested in reading it, though. It looks could be cool.
It's really in-depth, the report is.
170 pages?
Yeah, it's really... I mean, you don't have to read all that. Some of it is how they suggest that the cities go about actually, like, implementing the plan if they want to. But the first step is, like, a lot of the rezoning stuff, which happens both in Akron and in Cuyahoga Falls. This idea of a giant canoe, you can see it in the pictures that are in the newspaper. In one picture, it looks like this, like, weird kind of, like, light post is in the background. But then in the next picture after that, they show from above, and you can kind of see, like, the ribs of this giant canoe, which will be like in a like a median of a divided road on Merriman Road. So it's really interesting, and you know, they want to make sure that anything that's green now stays green, and that they have parks that are close to the river and make that more accessible for that area. So a lot of cool pictures and stuff in the report, definitely worth checking out. I know we're all pretty excited about you know, getting this thing happening, right?
Well, the world's largest canoe. Yeah.
Yeah, we need to be a tourist trap. I meant destination.
Oops, late. Freudian slip.
This morning, it took it out of me. No, I meant a destination. And everyone wants to see the world's largest canoe, right? Like the world's largest ball of twine or wheel of cheese.
Big butter Jesus.
Yeah. I do cool believe the world's biggest ball of twine is no longer the world's biggest ball of twine.
What? Somebody made a bigger one?
I believe somebody made a bigger one. Oh, but Minnesota is no longer Minnesota no longer has the biggest one.
Oh, man.
What's Weird Al going to do?
Exactly.
They still have the biggest mall.
That canoe, like, you know, it's not covered. So it's like it's just the ribs of the canoe. And there are like lights strung across the top of it. So you can kind of, and they have like, they have it set up kind of as a green space. So you can imagine like people actually in there, like sitting at tables, you know, eating from restaurants that are theoretically on either side of the road. I mean, it does look neat. It's different. It's not, you know, a typical, like, light post or whatever, because
it's not a tourist trap.
I don't think it's a tourist trap, no.
No, it's a tourist
trap. I mean, they do want it to be, like, simultaneously, like, sort of run in with the park, and yet also, like, something cool to be able to do, like, when you're not in the park going for a hike and stuff, and instead of, you know, storage spaces and bullshit, right? Check it out. It's online. It's really been on all the public pages, but especially the city of Akron, the city of Cuyahoga Falls, you can find it. Maybe we can post a link to it on our Facebook page so you can go check it out. It is a really big document, but you kind of scroll through, see pictures, and see what you think. All right, 14% of the city's residents now live in new wards thanks to new council ward maps that took effect on January 1st. All ward council members stay the same. The census data necessitated new maps. Triad Research Group did the research to move over 7,000 residents into new wards. Triad said an exchange of areas between wards 2 and 3, 3 and 4, 4 and 6, and 5 and 6 were needed to balance the population and make boundaries compact. And then ward 8 was actually redrawn just to make the boundary contiguous, because if you were to look at it before, there was kind of like some little spots that weren't really connected. Yeah. So they fixed that problem too. I didn't even know about this until I looked at it here in preparation for the show today. Did you guys hear about this?
No, I was just wondering.
No, I didn't.
Is there somewhere that we can see if our ward was changed or?
Yeah, I did hear about that.
I did hear about it.
Our website.
Oh.
Ooh. Oh.
Was 13,000 people changed locations and changed?
A significant number did.
Changed wards?
7,000, 14% of the city.
I don't think there were, I thought they said they didn't, that people didn't change wards.
It happens every 10 years.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's based on the census.
Yes, yeah. I know, but
and
I am looking.
It's senseless.
It's senseless. Nice. Nice.
I love the idea of Ward 8 becoming contiguous because that was confusing. But, I mean, it hadn't even occurred to me until you guys said that like, yeah, at least Searles and myself live in 4, and well, and Kathy, too. And so I wonder if we're still in 4. I have no idea.
I hope so.
Okay. I am looking at the map right now. It is in the December 13th City Council notes.
December 13th.
Okay.
And I am sure, because, jeez, if I can actually be able to see this, it is very small on the article. Mm-hmm. I apologize for that. I tried to shrink it to fit the article, and that was not a good idea.
Well, I wonder if what's on the city website, the maps that they have up there are
that,
updated.
You'll have that
now.
Map there, yeah.
Okay, so we'll be able to check and see changed. I couldn't help but think, and this is just devil's advocate, that, you know, that they just want to, like, redraw Adam Miller out of, like, reelectability.
No. But I was interested that Triad, it was nice to see a local business get that, but I thought they were, like, a media company, but Steve's like, no, they do consultation. So that was kind of cool.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know anything about them.
Yeah, well, if you live in any ward in the city, except, I guess, one, you should go check out the new maps and see. It might change where you vote next time you go.
Right.
I know I live right on the edge, I think, of 4, so it could be that I'd end up in a different ward now.
You're between 4 and 6, right? Aren't you between?
Yeah, right there on the line, I think, because when I moved recently, like only a couple blocks, and it seemed as though I wasn't going to be in 4 anymore, but then I looked it up and found out I was. Maybe now I'm not. So, well, worth checking out to see if you have found yourself with a new council person and
sure.
In a new ward, because I don't know. All right, so also a sanitation rate hike is taking place for the first time in 18 years. Councilman Gorbach was quoted in the article in the Falls News Press, and he said that the cost increases, you know, associated with sanitation necessitated the rate hike. Which is pretty meager, really, when you look at, like, the specific changes. It's a couple bucks for most people. So these costs included wage increases, and they're actually going to be buying a bunch of new carts also this year. And Adam Miller, speaking of Adam Miller, was the only dissenting vote on this whole thing. So
I'm just looking at Ward 6, and it got smaller.
Oh, no.
Ward 2 got bigger.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I totally
That's okay.
It.
No. So basically, like, you know, what they pay the folks who work in sanitation and then them having to buy these new carts and stuff, just some of the costs and things are going up. So folks are going to see a little bit of a rate hike. It depends,
you know,
like, it depends on how many people are in your household. But, like, I think that, like, the cheapest increase was, like, maybe $2 or $3. Mm-hmm. And the most expensive one seemed like it might have been, like, $8 or something. But
it
does depend on what you're actually what your household is and what services you're taking advantage of. Like, do you have yard waste? Do you have recycling? Mm-hmm. Do you have all of that? So
18 years is a long time for
Yeah, who can remember
increasing
a bill not going up in 18 years? Raise your hand.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. The Akron Zoo, on another note, is joining forces with the Akron Children's Hospital to sponsor a naming contest for the new baby Gibbon born on December 9th. You can visit akronzoo.org through January 26th to cast your vote, and you can pick from 5 different names, which are gender neutral because the baby's gender is not yet known. So the 5 names you can pick from are Lolani, Keo, Kanoa, Rue, and Jinzi. The best 2 names will actually be painted on the Gibbon enclosure, and then whichever one the parents of the new baby Gibbon interact with the most will be the one that they actually choose to name the new Gibbon.
Oh,
kind of cool.
We can't have Gibbon McGibbon face.
I think that's probably why they give you a choice of what names, because they're worried people like Mike Searle will pick, like, Monkey Face or something.
Oh, jeez.
What do you guys
think? I
hate
you, little Alex Baby Gibbon.
That's right, yeah. Screw Alex. Lulani, Keo, Kanoa, Rue, or Jinzi?
Jinzi.
Jinzi.
Yeah.
Jinzi is just a fun name to say.
I like Keo and Lulani also, but Jinzi is the one that sticks out in my mind as well.
Yeah.
I like Gibbon McGibbon face.
Oh boy.
That ship that they wanted to name Bodie McBoatface, they told the people who voted, sorry, we're not doing that. I think they did paint on the boat like Bodie. So it's like, it's USS whatever it is.
That's a little nod.
But like its nickname is Bodie. All right, now it's time for our newest segment to the False Cast. It's time for Suzanne's good news. Suzanne?
Speaking of the weather, I was scrolling through Facebook and I noticed that a lot of people were thanking their neighbors for helping them dig out of their driveway. There was a story about somebody's son who was stuck for about 3 hours, and the city came out and helped dig him out and got him home safe. And the football team was out there helping people out. So I'd say good news, neighbors helping neighbors, and another great reason that we love Cuyahoga Falls.
Yeah, I know our own Mike Searle was out helping a neighbor, right?
He was, yeah. He's out there. Yeah. I was drinking my second cup of coffee, watching him, yeah.
Son of a bitch. Came in after a bit, I'm like, I need some coffee.
Yeah.
I went out there for a little bit and helped a couple of folks. It was rough over here on my street, man. It was not going well for folks. Elmwood was really bad. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to get to Washington, but if you could just get to Oakwood, you were okay. And it was tough to
just
get there.
Getting there is the problem.
Yeah, it was heavy and wet, and it just was hard to move. So
and deep,
yeah.
And deep and very deep. I mean, we were talking about. Probably been 10 years since I remember it having this much snow dumped in such a short period of time. So I also want to thank, and I think we all want to thank, you know, all the plow truck drivers out there. I know that you guys were working really, really hard out there for all last night, you guys. I think there was 24 trucks out there. I think 28 trucks out there working just overtime to clean out the streets. And, you know, that is a pretty much a thankless job. Because, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't for them. Because
you see
not...
plenty of thankless comments on Top of Town.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, yep. What about me?
And when they do go down your street, they complain because the snow happens to go onto their
street.
Yeah, which is no fault of their own. So, you know, it is a very thankless job. But we would like to thank you because we know you're working very hard. And we appreciate you being out there when all of us want to just... not go out there at all. So thank you very much.
All right. Now it's time for everybody's favorite part of the False Cast. Kick that beat, Mike.
Really? Bards arts, bards arts, bards arts, bards arts.
Bards arts.
Oh man, that was the best one we did so far. It was good.
Barty McBardface.
Oh man. Sorry, I'll
don't let that into the wild again. So Clyde and Arts Now are looking for volunteers for the River in the City Art Installation Project. If you wish to volunteer to support this effort, you can visit their Eventbrite registration page. I will post it in the show links here, and I'll share it on our Facebook page.
So they're looking to volunteer to help?
They're looking for volunteers to help install the River in the City art installation. That they're going to be putting along. It's going to go alongside the Cauga River.
Cool.
Do we know what it is yet?
We do not. Okay. And in fact, as of right now, the meeting for this meeting for volunteers will be on January 27th. But as of right now, they're still not sure if it's going to be in person or virtually. That's actually one of the questions they ask in the registration is, you know, do you feel comfortable doing it in person or would you prefer it to be over the computer?
Yeah.
So they want to make sure all the volunteers feel comfortable in learning about this effort. Instead of, you know, just saying it's going to be here at this time and not getting anybody to show up.
Well, what a fun way to volunteer and bring more art into the city. So
absolutely. And next, Cuyahoga Falls' PNR will hold its 20th anniversary live show in person at Jilly's Music Room in Akron. So it's not going to be at the Quirk Center, but it will be still live in person. It will be a 1920-themed improv show, free to attend, though, of course, it being at a bar, you know, definitely go and support the bar and buy some drinks with some food.
So what happens? Have you been to one of them before, or do you?
They ask for, like, suggestions from the crowd to create, like, on-the-fly little comedy skits, right?
Correct.
Are they going to dress up in like the 1920s or what
And you don't have to, but you can. It will be on Wednesday, February 9th.
Okay. All right.
What time? 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
I've been a couple times. It's awesome. And Jilly's actually, what a great venue for it, too. It's a really nice place. And
yeah, I've been in shows over at Jilly's before, and it's the perfect place to hold something like this.
Yeah, it seems like it'll be a good spot. Even if it's not in the falls, it's still good.
And finally, the Downtown Cog Falls Partnership will hold its Chocolate Walk on February 4th.
Yes.
Chocolate.
Registration is $30. And all the participants will get chocolate surprises from all the participating businesses downtown.
Oh,
man. Did anyone do that last year? Did you, anyone?
I don't believe it was last year. They did do it in 2020, but I don't think they got to do it last year.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was asking if any of you guys went and attended it.
Mm-mm. No.
We were talking about it, but we didn't do it. Give me the chocolate martini from Cashmere Cricket. That was,
I saw some pictures on Facebook or something of it, and it was like, it looked pretty good. Fancy. Yeah.
Yeah. We should do something. Instead of just talking about doing it.
Jen is always the recommender of things.
I'm never the follow-thrower.
we always talk about doing things and never do it. I thought that was our relationship. I thought that's what we did. Oh. Yeah, that sounds fun. Let's do it. And then we don't.
We've done
some stuff. We're old.
We drink in each other's driveways. And
we do. We do. That's true. Yeah.
Bart, I have a question for you. You know what's going on in the Jenks building?
Yes, it's gone. It's whited out.
Yeah, they put white paper in all the windows. And
they're remodeling it. They're doing a complete overhaul.
Yeah.
Oh.
What?
So I've been following their page. Yeah, they're close to February, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
They're thanking all their people. And, okay. They actually, so... Yeah, I played music there a couple times, and even back in the fall when I was still playing stuff there.
You're in a
like
band?
They were, no, actually, I think right now I'm technically not in a band. I maybe one.
Wait, snap your fingers, Alex. Will be back in a band.
Give it time. But no, they were saying then that they were very much going to close after Christmas season, and they were planning a big renovation to make the place even more special. They're going to have there's a couple new businesses coming in. They've got like a national like remodeling group or something, or contractors group or something that's going to have its headquarters there. There's going to be a retail business that sells supplies for kayaking and stuff. And then as far as I know, they're going to continue to have the consignment stuff in there. People who sell candles, Flourish Plant Market, a lot of like little businesses that bring in their stuff and sell on consignment there. And then I know that they want to continue to make sure that they're doing a lot of art and live music and even like live theater. You know, that could potentially maybe that could be a home for PNR sometime.
Yeah. Especially upstairs. That's such a cool room up there.
Yeah. Well, they do have an actual like ballet space, like dance studio up there. And I know they did like a kind of a scaled down version of the Nutcracker during the holiday season. And yeah, they've got a lot of, we ended up doing our 50th episode anniversary special there, but we even thought about going upstairs at one point and doing it up there when we were considering that. So it's an amazing space with a lot of potential. So, I mean, if they're going to put in the work and make it even more special than it already is, then, man, I'm into it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool place.
Is that it, Bart?
That's it.
All right, well, we want to thank our listeners for joining us this week, and we want to thank the CF Digging History gentlemen for speaking with us as well. So stick around right after this for Bart's interview with them. And remember that we do want to hear your ideas for potential interviewees, and you can shout them out to us at falsfreepress@gmail.com. And we are, of course, always in the market for article submissions as well. And you can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever if you enjoyed what you heard, or if you just want to, talk shit to Mike. That's cool, too. For now, we will say goodbye, and we hope you'll join us next week. Get out there, get vaccinated, so we can get the hell over this thing. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Later.
And we're back on the Fallscast this week with Ian Myers and Jason Fleming from the Digging Cuyahoga Falls History Group on Facebook. Thank you guys for joining us this week.
Hey, thanks for having us.
So, how did you guys get into the hobby of metal detecting?
Well, it was always just something I was really interested in. You know, I mean, I grew up in a little town, Wakeman, Ohio, and, you know, I started off when I was a kid looking for arrowheads, and it just kind of evolved into to that treasure hunt sort of thing. And I met Ian 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I was actually doing some work in Cuyahoga Falls, and I saw him. He was out in a park swinging a metal detector, and I just stopped and talked to him.
Yeah, for me, I always wanted to do it as a kid. I've always been kind of a history buff, and never really had the money growing up as a kid to afford a metal detector. So, you know, it was just one of those things where I just said, I'm going to try it, and if I like it, I like it, and if not, I don't. And I love it, and I don't think I'm ever going to stop doing it.
Very fun hobby to get into. I recall when I was a kid, friends of my dad were into it, and we tried it a little bit. And I love just, you know, as a kid, digging down and, you know, finding what's underneath.
Right. Yeah, you just never know. That's the thing. I mean, we have people always say, like, oh, you'll never find anything in my yard. And then we start pulling up all this stuff. It's like, you know, you don't really think about what's, you know, 5-6 inches underneath your own soil until you have someone out there that knows what they're doing and can, you know, find it for you. And it's just opens up a lot of people's eyes what's underneath their own property, what's in their own yard.
What are some unusual things that you have found while hunting?
I mean, nothing really unusual. I mean, we find, you know, you find a lot more garbage than anything. That's a fact. But, I mean, you do find a lot of stuff that's, like, worth saving. Like, we have our whole table set up here because we're going to do our end of the year wrap up. I mean, like, you'll find, like, buckles. I don't know if you can see that.
Okay.
You know, jewelry, silver coins.
You know, you learn about so much stuff, particularly if you've been doing it for a few years. There's just so many items that, I don't know, it's hard to explain, you know. I mean, there's, like, for instance, you know, everybody carries a plastic driver's license in their wallet. But, you know, back in the 40s, I don't know if you can see this. Okay, so this is like a pin badge. This would have been a driver. This is a driver's license for, like, wow, a milkman or a bus driver or, you know, somebody in a profession like that. That's what their driver's license looks like.
So it's essentially a CDL.
Yeah, yeah. It was a pin that would have been, they would have wore on their cap or their shirt or whatever, you know.
Then you have, like, you know, that's cool. I mean, they don't make that kind of stuff anymore, but then like, it's a Civil War cannonball that I found in someone's yard, you know, just shot and that's where it landed, and, you know, here you go. You know, it's just, you just never know what you're gonna find. That's the thing, you just never know.
What are your guys' connections to Cuyahoga Falls?
Ian can tell you more about it, but he's from Cuyahoga Falls.
Okay.
He has your connection to Cuyahoga Falls.
Oh, okay. I was born and raised in Cuyahoga Falls. So, you know, I've lived in the falls my entire life. And then, like Jay said earlier, he was just driving around, stumbled across me, metal detecting, and then that's how we know each other, and we've been friends ever since.
Yeah. When I first met Ian, you know, I was new to the hobby, and he had a few months more experience than I do. So I was trying to learn from somebody kind of experience. So, you know, that's where I, you know, we just kind of clicked and decided to do some hunting at Waterworks Park here in the falls. And then he wanted to do a YouTube channel, and I'm like, yeah, I'll be part of it. And it just kind of evolved from there. But yeah, growing up, I didn't have a connection to the falls. I just kind of stumbled into it.
So, since your group on Facebook is digging Cuyahoga Falls history, what kinds of Cuyahoga Falls history have you discovered? Like, you talked about the driver's license and cannonball, specifically, like, Cuyahoga Falls history that you found.
Well, if you want to go check some of that stuff out, we have it on display at the Cuyahoga Falls Historic Society. We have buttons, we have tokens up there. Old waterworks passes back in the day where you would have to sew the metal clip onto your shorts. Jason he's going through his stuff right now. Yeah. You really don't find a lot of stuff that says Cuyahoga Falls on it. So when you do find something that says Cuyahoga Falls on it, I mean, a rare find, and I have a St. Cox Billards token that's up on the display at the Cuyahoga Falls Historic Society.
This was an item. This is a sterling silver spoon that I found here in Cuyahoga Falls. And the back of the spoon had a monogram on it. So, we were able to trace that to, you know, the family that once owned it. And, you know, that was local history. And, yeah, I think I've found a few local store tokens. And, you know, of course, you find Civil War things. We found bullets and buttons and whatnot. Not a whole lot of stuff that actually says Cuyahoga Falls on it, but we found a plethora of stuff here in Cuyahoga Falls.
Of course.
You know, old suspender buckles, crotal bells, which, you know, were used on horse-drawn carriages and just all kinds of things.
With the spoon, you said you traced it to the family that once owned it. Were any members of that family still around?
No, the lady that lived at the house there, she was not a relative of any of them. But, you know, obviously we were able to trace that back to the original owners, who had a last name that corresponded with
the monograms
on the spoon. So
where do you usually decide to hunt, or how do you decide where to hunt? Rather,
we kind of just wing it. I mean, we go all over Ohio, so we'll usually just pick a direction and just go. And if we see something old, we'll door knock, ask permission. If we land it, great. If not, we keep on going. We don't stop until we land something.
And it's kind of evolved the more years we've been hunting. You know, when we first started out, you know, we were hunting houses that were built in the 40s and 50s, and we were mostly looking for, like, silver dimes and stuff like that. And I think for about the last 2 years, we've really been targeting – we try to look for homes that were built in the 1800s or the mid-1800s. So we tend to go towards that direction, particularly since we've started being involved with the historic societies, because we're looking for those older items, you know, the Civil War buttons, the things that can be put on display in the museum, old padlocks and stuff like that.
Have you ever been any place that you've started a search and, you know, you find something, but then you haven't been able to dig into that spot or been allowed to dig into that spot and just wondered what you might have found?
Well, you know, we have been on properties, of course, with permission, you know, and never go on any property unless you have permission. But, you know, we have had homeowners that give us permission, and we'll, you know, start metal detecting, and we'll dig a few plugs, and we'll start finding one or two things. And then the homeowner changes their mind and says, hey, you know, on second thought, I really don't want you to do this. So, and we end up leaving. And then we wonder, because we found one or two good things, and it's like, what else could be there?
Yeah.
But, you know, again, if you don't have permission, you just can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to respect that if I'm in somebody else's yard on their property, it's their rules because they own it. So we appreciate the people that allow us to dig. And sometimes it's just the breaks, man. If you just can't always get where you want to go.
Yeah, sometimes the husband will say yes and the wife doesn't want it, or the wife says yes and the husband doesn't want it, and that's, you know,
or
it happens.
And, you know, we've had a few times where, you know, the couples were really excited to let us do that because they wanted to know what we would find, and we would start finding things like Indian head pennies or some cool old buttons, and they shut it down immediately because now they want to go buy a metal detector and detect their own yards, which, again, that's their right. So, you know.
And at the same time, if they go do that, those things are still being found. You just don't know what they are.
Well, a big misconception for a lot of people is that you're going to go out and you're going to, you know, spend $100 and buy a metal detector and immediately find awesome stuff. It doesn't,
right.
It can happen that way, but it generally doesn't. You know, I mean, we've put in thousands of hours to try to learn our craft, so to speak. And, you know, you constantly upgrade equipment, something that allows you to detect deeper or separate different types of metals. There's a lot that goes into it. So it's not as easy as just, hey, I'm going to grab a detector and then I'm going to find amazing stuff.
Right. Yeah. Cause I mean, there's multiple tones to listen for. And if you don't have the experience, you know,
then you're not going to find it. But that's even with us, you know, there's places that we've been allowed to come back time and time and time again. And, you know, we might hunt the same property 5 or 6 times and not really find a whole lot, but then come back on that 7th or 8th time and find all kinds of stuff, you know?
Okay, that also has to do with, you know, well, sometimes the ground erodes and,
well,
you know, things get brought up.
Yeah, right. That's absolutely correct. Well, and there's so many factors that can go into it, ground moisture and all that. And there's also just experience, you know. I'm obviously a much better metal detectorist today than I was 2 years ago, you know.
Right, yeah. Sometimes we go back to places we hunted 3 years ago with older equipment. We go back there and we find all sorts of stuff because we have more experience and better equipment.
Speaking of equipment, what kind of metal detectors are you usually the best, or at least for a beginner?
For a beginner, I would probably go with like a Garrett 200 and start off with a Garrett 200 or Garrett 300 just to see if you even like the hobby. And then, you know, that's what I did. I started off with a Garrett Ace 200. And I went from the Garrett Ace 200 to the Garrett AT Pro. And then, you know, that was an upgrade. But it took me a while because I wanted to make sure I liked the hobby. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, I want to fork out $600 on a machine that's going to get deeper. You know, if it's a hobby you don't enjoy, there's no sense going out and buying the most expensive thing if you're going to hate it. You got to, like, kind of work your way into it.
And every detectorist you talk to, be it me, Ian, or everybody's going to have their opinions. And for me, after being in the hobby 5 years, I would say if someone came to me and said, hey, I want to get into this hobby, what should I buy? I would tell them to buy a Nocta Macro Simplex, which is what I currently swing. I mean, it's going to cost you $350, but you're going to get a machine that can compete on the level with a $600 or $700 machine for $300. But I know not everybody has that $300 to spend on a metal detector.
No.
You know, I certainly didn't. But in the long run, it would have been cheaper if I would have just bought that machine from the beginning rather than buy a lesser machine and then keep upgrading.
What do you recommend for people who are just getting started, like how to get into the hobby? Like, obviously, you know, get a metal detector. I'll find, you know, one that works for you. But, like, where do you recommend people start, types of places people start looking and seeing if they enjoy the hobby?
Start with your own yard first.
Yes, most definitely. I would tell anybody, the first thing you need to do, you need to learn how to dig a plug properly. So you don't want to just leave holes in the ground wherever you go. And you want to learn how to be able to, when you dig a hole, to put everything back in it and basically replant the grass on top so it's neat. And you should practice that most definitely in your own yard. But once you could do that, I would tell people go to parks and then, you know, talk to your friends, your aunts, your uncles.
Yeah.
And
try to get a permission off of them or their place.
Right. Try to get into their properties.
You want to find history, you got to find it in people's yards. You're not really going to find history in parks.
Yeah. Public places have been hunted out. You know, people have been metal detecting since the late 60s. And parks were where they all went to first.
If you want to find pocket change and maybe a silver ring here and there, yeah, then go to a park.
Then,
you know, it all depends on what you want to find is what you got to.
Right. Eventually, once you start, you're going to find your niche of what you want to hunt for. You know, there's metal detectors and all they want to dig is iron. You know, they like horseshoes and cannonballs and things of that nature. So they'll find a way to find the ground that holds those items. Like Ian says, if you're interested in picking up some extra pocket change, parks are a great place to do that. And then if
an occasional silver ring or a gold ring,
right. You know. And if you get to the point that you're interested in more historical items, you'll find that venue. It's different for everybody, what types of things you like to find.
One thing I will say, I don't know if this kind of relates to your question or not, but research is key. Research is absolute key to this hobby. You can, you know, if you want to find old stuff, you know, a 1990 house can be built on an old 1800 general store. You know, you just don't know unless you do the research, and there's stuff there.
And I would like to kind of throw one addendum out there just for novice people. I don't know the city that you live in, but you should always check with your local government or your police department before you go to any public place and make sure that you are allowed to metal detect and dig in those areas. There's some cities, like I know if you're in the up in Cleveland area, you can metal detect in a public park, but you have to have a permit from the city to do so. Down here in Cuyahoga Falls, we don't have to have a permit. I live in Lorain, Ohio, and up there, we don't have to have a permit. But there are places where you do, and there's some places you're just not allowed.
Like Talmadge, you're not allowed.
Yeah, Talmadge, you're not allowed to dig in a public park. So always make sure you find out if you're allowed to dig there before you just go to a public place. That is a key thing if you're new getting into the hobby. You don't want to do anything to make the hobby look bad for the rest of the people that are out here following the rules.
Has there been any place that you've gone that you've had permission to hunt and dig that you felt was sort of haunted, or you have had an eerie feeling about the place?
We've done, and then you end up finding stuff. We've done a place in Noble County that was supposedly haunted, and they were having their paranormal crew come out like the day after us, and we didn't really find too much. Remember that place?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't really.
I have personally hunted. I don't think I've hunted it when we were filming on the channel. But yeah, I've hunted around some old houses that I had permission, abandoned houses that were just kind of creepy. And then up in Lorain, there was an old retirement home, and if I would hunt there in the dusk in the evening, and it's like you could feel people just watching you from the windows. I got goosebumps even thinking about it.
You said it was an old retirement home, as in like it used to be a retirement home. Now it was abandoned.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Oh yeah, that would be that. Yeah, that would be even during the daytime. That would be creepy.
It's actually, during the day, it's very beautiful, but the back of the property, it's all like steps. You know, there's hills that go down and then a flat spot and hills that go down. During the day, it's very beautiful back there, but when the sun goes down, man, it gets creepy.
We would like to do Rogue's Hollow. That'd be awesome.
Oh, yes.
That would be cool, but, I mean, that's... You gotta know the right people, and we don't know the right people, so...
Yeah, I've heard quite a few stories about that. Some paranormal hunters, friends of mine, who've gone in there.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can lead us in the right direction, because we'd love to go do that.
Oh, possibly. I'll feel
donate
like
donate everything
do.
To, like, Doylestown and all that. So, I mean, that'd be cool.
When it comes to finding change, I know you're not supposed to clean up the coins, but if there's, like, if it's not a historical coin, it's just, you know, you're taking it to the bank, do you need to clean them up before they go, or?
I kind of give them, like, a real quick once-over, just yeah. Knock the crud off and the mud, because, you know, someone else is going to get that coin, and it's like, that's just me. I'm not going to sit there and scrub it till it's clean, clean, clean.
So,
but I will turn them in kind of cruddy, but.
Speaking for myself, I save all my common coins through the whole year, and then at the end of the year, I go to my bank, and I mean, I wash them off. I wash the mud off of them. But that's as far as I take it. And then I roll them in wrapper rolls, you know, $10 in quarters or whatever. And then when I turn it into my bank, I let my bank know that this is money that has been dug from the ground. It needs to go to the Federal Reserve and not to put it back out in circulation, because it's mostly not good for circulation.
See, I don't do that.
But
I just turn it in. I'm like, oh.
I do that because, I mean, if I was at a gas station buying gas and somebody handed me change and it was a bunch of ground dug quarters, I think I'd be pretty upset.
Well, I know with older coins, you're not supposed to polish them, or, you know, you don't want to change the mint condition looks like versus what it is.
So it all depends. I mean, for me, anything that comes out of the ground is already environmental damage.
Yeah.
So you're not going to really get much out of it anyway if it's copper. Silver, it's going to be, you know, a little bit tarnished. And some people like the tarnish. You know, silver cleans up great. Gold cleans up great. Gold coins, gold, silver coins. Copper coins, not so much. But unless you find, like, an 1877 Indian head that's a key date, you know, you might still be able to sell that for something. But for the most part, the coins you find aren't worth nothing.
And truthfully, you know, that comes a lot from coin collectors. You know, don't rub your coins. You know, you don't want to scratch them. Again, it comes down to, like, a key coin, something that might be very rare. Because, you know, if it's got dirt on it, there could be a grain of sand in there. And if you got a 1916 D Mercury dime and you go to wipe it off and you run that grain of sand across it, you're going to devalue that coin by hundreds or thousands of dollars, depending on what its starting condition was. But for the most part, you can rinse silver coins off with water. And I would say if it's a common date coin, hey, if you want to, and this is going to be an unpopular opinion, if you want to buff it and polish it, buff it and polish it, because you found it, it belongs to you. You do what you want. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean,
I personally don't polish mine. Any of my silver or gold, I literally just rinse it under warm water, and that's all I do with it.
Yeah, copper coins all clean because they're not really worth anything anyway.
Yeah, a copper coin will never,
like a large cent or a 2 cent piece or something like that.
It'll have more of a historical value than an actual numismatic value, because it's the just sitting in the ground just destroys them. But they're still fun to find.
Yep.
So, end with this, Gary. Like I said, you were part of the group Digging Cog of False History on Facebook. There's quite a few people in the group. So about,
yeah, we're growing. We're at about 1,078 right now members on YouTube. We're at 542 subs. So, I mean, each year we're growing and growing and growing, and it's, you know, that's what we like. You know, we like to represent Cuyahoga Falls, so it's like, the more we keep growing, the more our name gets out there, the more people are going to know where we are or who we are and where we're from and what we do, and that's good for us.
Where can people find you on YouTube?
You just type in metal detecting, and there's a you know, we're a dime a dozen. There's 1,001,000,000, you know, metal detecting pages out there. It's just, you got to find it. If you type in Digging CF History, we'll pop right up.
I would like to throw a disclaimer. I don't know if any of your audience are school teachers, or if you're thinking you're going to sit down with your kids and watch it, preview our stuff before you do, because sometimes we get excited and we're grown men.
We cuss.
And we do swear occasionally.
Yeah, for regular listeners of the FalseCast, they'll know there are some episodes we have that I have marked explicit for reason.
Well, I always like to throw that disclaimer out there, because I would hate.
Yeah, we're not always PG.
Yeah, I would hate for somebody to turn on a really exciting episode and he's over here swearing like a sailor.
Who I am, man, I can't help. Yeah, but you just type in Digging CF History in YouTube. You'll find us. Sub us. That'd be great. Watch, we have 93 videos out. So,
wow.
Yeah. Or again, if you're just interested in seeing some of the stuff we find, please just go down to Cuyahoga Falls Historical Society. They're on
2083 Cook Street. We got our whole display set up right there for them.
As soon as you walk in the door, there's a 6-foot display case, and that's all. It's 90% of stuff that we have found in the falls.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
A few really, really cool choice items have come from Doylestown or
Talmadge, you know,
some of the surrounding areas. But 90% of it we have found in Cuyahoga Falls. And
Sean Andrews, she's awesome. So go check her out.
Yeah, oh, absolutely amazing. And there's even some other things. Like, we find some bottles. We found a bunch of bottles in the river, you know, whiskey bottles from the 1800s that are unbroken.
Yeah.
And some of those are on display down there as well. So feel free, and it's no charge to stop in if that's what you're interested in, or follow us or subscribe to us or whatever.
Absolutely. I hope everyone who listens to the interview, if you're interested in metal detecting, go check these guys out. And, you know, if you're interested in getting into the hobby, you know, do your research and find out what you need to do.
Yeah, if they get on Digging CF History on Facebook, send us a message if you got a question. Hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing this, thinking about doing that. What do you recommend? You know, we're not experts, but, you know, we have some knowledge that we're willing to give out and, you know, give advice and whatnot, so.
Wonderful. Well, Ian, Jason, thank you for joining us this week.
Bart, thanks
and
for having us.
We'll see everyone next week. Bye.
All right. See
you, everybody.
FalseCast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Bart Sullivan. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Call to Falls friends and family so they can listen as well.
Alex McAssface.
Keep that.
Andy McBandy.
Michael McFuckface. Is that one word?
Man.
Yeah.